Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
Season 6, Episode 6 of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Redcon One, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right. Welcome, everybody, to another week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And we are continuing our discussion of the Larry Scott years, 1965, 1966 Mr. Olympias, the first two Mr. Olympias ever held and the only two that Larry Scott ever won. And along with those competitions, of course, they also held the IFBB Mr. America, Mr. Universe, and in 1966, they also included the Mr. World contest. So our guest today is someone who was at those competitions. He was competing, and he's one of the legendary bodybuilders of the 1960s. His name is Don Howarth, and those of you who know your bodybuilding history know that Don was renowned for having those wide shoulders and small waist. He had that classic V-taper. And he won the 1967 Mr. America, IFBB, and he beat out Frank Zane. That was the high point of his career. He didn't compete for too many years, so Don is now 83 years old. He still lives in California, and we were able to talk to him, so it was great that I was able to have an interview with the legendary Don Howarth, and he's still doing really well. So that interview will be coming up in a second. I do want to mention that we are brought to you by Redcon One. At Redcon One, they believe in working hard at achieving your goals. Whether you're killing it in the gym or running a six-minute mile, Redcon One has something for those willing to put in the work. Their premier clinically dosed pre-workout called Total War is the perfect companion to your workout to give you that extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. And you can fuel your body after those workouts with the revolutionary MRE. This is the only whole food complete meal replacement with protein coming from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs, and carb sources coming from sweet potatoes and oats, and it also contains 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. This is the best tasting complete meal you will ever have. So go to redcon1.com and try the very best that sports nutrition has to offer, and make sure you check out their new MRE bars also that are coming many, many flavors. Redcon One, the highest state of readiness, and you can enter the discount code LEGENDS, and you'll get 15% discount off your order. And we're also brought to you by Old School Labs. With so many supplements on the market, it can be hard to know which brand is the right one. And as a three-time Natural Mr. Universe and the first Natural Mr. Olympia winner, the quality of supplements and knowing what I'm taking is very important to me, which is why Old School Labs is giving you a 12% discount off your purchase. So just go to oldschoollabs.com and use the code LEGEND12 at the checkout. Old School Labs supplements that make sense. And with Old School Labs, you want to make sure to try their new Brawn protein. This is a protein that is made from whole food sources such as eggs, milk, and beef. And I love that Brawn protein. I take it once or twice a day, every day. I love it. Thank you to Old School Labs and to Redcon One for sponsoring this season and this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Also, speaking of our interviews, what I'm doing now with some of our podcast interviews is I'm converting them over into videos and I'm putting them on YouTube. So my YouTube channel is under John Hansen, under my name. So if you subscribe to my YouTube channel, I'm trying to put one up a week. And I just put up Season 5, Episode 3, which was our interview with Boyer Coe, which was a great interview because Boyer is always one of my favorite interviews. He's very articulate. He has some great stories. And, of course, Boyer has seen it all. He competed in the 1960s, the 1970s, and up to the 1980s. And then he came back in the 1990s and competed in the Masters Mr. Olympia. So Boyer has competed against the best. He was one of the best bodybuilders of his generation. And he's always got some great stories. So what I did was I took our podcast interview with Boyer, which was Season 5, Episode 3, and I converted it to a video and I added a ton of pictures to it. So it took me a while to do it, but go to my YouTube channel under my name, John Hansen, you can check that out. It should be right up there under the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. All right, I have some sad news to report. If you haven't heard, Doris Berrio passed away last week. I think it was last weekend, actually. It was right after we did the opening for my show last week, so I didn't get to mention it. But Doris was known as the first lady of bodybuilding because she actually started women's bodybuilding. In 1979, she held the very first women's bodybuilding competition in Brandon, Florida, which is close to where I live right now in Tampa. And I believe Laura Combs was the first winner. So Doris got the whole ball rolling for the competitions for women, because before that, there was only men's bodybuilding. And you may not believe this, but back in the day, back in the 70s, women were not even really training at the gyms. They weren't even really allowed in the gyms. It was a guys' club, and mostly it was just powerlifters and bodybuilders in the gyms. And if a woman walked in there, they were pretty much frowned upon. So some gyms had women's sections, you know, like the health club, they would have a section called the women's section, but it wasn't anything like it is today. And there was no events where women could compete in bodybuilding. So Doris Berrio was the one who got it all started with the women's bodybuilding. And then, of course, they had the very first Miss Olympia competition 1 year later in 1980. And Rachel McLish was the winner there. And then it just really took off from there. And in the 1980s, women's bodybuilding was the hottest thing going. And of course, now women's bodybuilding has sort of died off, but it's been replaced with the fitness competitions, the figure, the bikini is the big one, women's physique. And there's so many women involved in the sport of bodybuilding now. It's just, it's kind of funny to see, because I came into the sport back in 77 is when I started. So I've got to see the whole generation of women coming in, and it's really, really different now. But Doris Berrio was the one who started it, and she passed away at, I believe she was 86 years old. I did an interview with Doris about 4 years earlier when she was 82, and this was before I started Florida Physique, which is the website I did out here in Florida for about 3 years, where I was covering all the local shows. Doris was at one of the contests with Georgia Miller Fudge, who was one of the very first women bodybuilders. I think she was actually in Doris's very first contest that she held. And I think Georgia was about 67, maybe. And Doris at the time was 82. So I got to do an interview with them. If you search YouTube, or if you're on my Facebook page, I have that interview up. And I just posted it up this last week as a tribute to Doris after she passed away. So she was a great lady. I always invited her to my contest out here in Florida. I had three competitions in Tampa while I was out here, and I invited her to all of them, just as a form of respect for what she's done in the sport. She was also a great photographer, and she took many, many pictures. She had a lot of covers for muscular development, I think for Strength and Health, the Hoffman magazines, Muscle Training Illustrated, maybe even Muscle Mag, possibly. But she was all over the place during her time, and she really helped get a lot of publicity for a lot of bodybuilders, especially for the guys out here in Florida. So Doris Berrio really, really did a lot for the sport, and may she rest in peace. All my condolences to her family and friends. I know it was kind of sudden that she passed, so we're all going to miss her. She really was a character, and like I said, without her, women's bodybuilding may not even have gotten around. The women today who are competing in the sport really owe it to Doris, because she's the one who got the ball rolling. All right. In other news, they had some really good competitions this last weekend. They had the IFBB New York Pro out in New York, Steve Weinberger show. And this is always one of the top pro shows of the year. And they had some really great bodybuilders in it. I was checking it out online. Regan Grimes, who is a really good bodybuilder because he's got really great shape and real good symmetry, something you don't see a lot in the pro bodybuilding world today. Regan decided at the last minute to go into the classic physique division, and he won. But it really would have been interesting if Regan would have stayed in the open bodybuilding and would have competed there, because it seems like the open bodybuilding is ruled now by the massive mass monsters and the hardness. And actually, some of the guys aren't even that hard. Some of them look out of condition. But it's the guys who are the biggest and blown out, I guess you could say, who are doing the best. And Regan does not have that look at all. He has more of an old school look. So being an old school bodybuilder myself, it really would have been interesting to see Regan go into the open and see how he would have placed. Because if he would have had the best physique, then he should have won, unless the judges are just going for all mass at all costs. So, which is probably what would have happened. So he probably made the right decision competing in classic. But that would have been interesting if he would have went in the open. Another guy I want to mention was in the 212 division. His name is Zane Watson, and he's from Canada. His father, as many of you may have known, was Mike Watson, who was a Mr. Canada winner. And I remember Mike Watson because he had a real vascular physique back in the 1970s. He also had really good legs, kind of curly black hair. He was a really good bodybuilder. I remember him. And Zane Watson is his son. Zane is an awesome bodybuilder. Really, really incredible physique. He's got a lot of the characteristics of his dad. His upper body looks even better than his dad did back in the 70s. And Zane is noteworthy because he has a great posing routine. He did a posing routine at last year's Arnold Classic, not this year, but last year. And Arnold actually went up to the stage and videotaped it with his phone because it was such an awesome routine. It was really well choreographed to the music. And it's always great to see these pro bodybuilders who work on their routine. So that was great to see. And he looks like he made an unbelievable improvement. He did take second place in the contest, though, to Sean Clarita, who was another awesome bodybuilder. Sean used to compete, God, I think he was a bantamweight because he's really short. I think he's like 5'3". And he has increased his muscle mass every year, and he's made so much improvement. So he really looks amazing. The amount of muscle this guy has put on has just been incredible. He just keeps improving every year. And he's still got that tight waist. He's still got a great physique. And Sean Clarita, at probably at 175 pounds, won the 212 division. So that was really amazing. So congratulations to both of those guys. Nathan Diascia was the winner in the open division, and he looked like he had that pretty easily. I want to mention in the figure division, Jessica Reyes Padilla, my old friend, she took second place. So she's doing really, really well because that was a tough competition. And then the other big contest of the week was the Junior USA, the MPC Junior USA, which was the first national level show of the year. It's always held in, I think it used to be held in April, but now it's held in May for some reason. And Hunter Labrada, Lee Labrada's son, won the overall. So he won the super heavyweights and the overall. And he is on his way probably to getting his pro card. They don't give pro cards out at the Junior USA or the Junior Nationals, but they will give it out at the Nationals later this year, and I'm sure that's where Hunter is going. I'm not sure how old Hunter is. I tried to look it up on the internet, but I couldn't find it. But I know his dad, Lee Labrada, got his pro card when he was 25. And so I think Hunter's probably about the same age. I don't think he's in his 30s yet. So Lee got his pro card at the 1985 MPC Nationals when he won the middleweight class because, of course, Lee Labrada is much shorter than Hunter. Lee's wife, Robin, is very tall. She's used to be a fashion model, so I think she's about 6 feet tall. And I think Lee Labrada himself is only about 5'5" or 5'6", might be 5'6". So Hunter's right in the middle. He looks like he's about 5'10", 5'11". And really big guy and great physique. And it's really, really interesting to see the sons of these classic bodybuilders like Sergio Oliva, Lee Labrada, Mike Watson. And now their sons have progressed to the pro level. Well, Hunter's not there yet, but I'm sure he will be this year. I think he's got to be a favorite to get his pro card at the Nationals this year. And he's still got the really classic physique, just like his father. He's got the tight waist. He doesn't have the bloated stomach. Probably not as quite as good of a poser as Lee Labrada is, but that would be an unbelievable task because Lee was one of the best posers ever in the history of bodybuilding. All right, what else is going on? Well, this week I'll be heading out to Venice Beach, California. So I'm excited about that. I'm leaving on Friday and I'll be out there for Memorial Day weekend. And I'll be attending the Venice Beach show, I think it's called the Muscle Beach show. And that'll be on Memorial Day itself on Monday. So I'm hoping to get some interviews out there. I want to see Phil Williams get inducted into the Muscle Beach Hall of Fame. And I know he's really excited about that. So hopefully I hook up with some old friends and I'll get some interviews out there while I'm there. I just saw the movie Deadpool 2. That was a really good movie. Real funny, just like the first one. Not quite as good as the first one, in my opinion, but I thought it was good. And Josh Brolin was in it. He was the bad guy, Cable, and he's really ripped. And I remember Dave Bautista, who trains at Powerhouse Gym, where I go to, in Powerhouse Gym Athletic Club, it's called, in Tampa, Florida. Dave was telling me he was at Gold's Gym, I think, last year. And Josh Brolin came up to him, and Dave didn't even recognize him because he was so ripped. And you could tell in this movie, he's really, really ripped. So that'd be cool if I got to run into Josh Brolin out there. I know Arnold works out there, but I think he works out early in the morning. So I'm not sure if he'll be in town or not. I know the Arnold Classic in South Africa was this last weekend also. And Erin Stern, who goes to our gym, who used to be a Miss Figure Olympia winner, I think she won that 2 or 3 times at least. And now she is no longer with the IFBB, but she is now competing in the other IFBB that is run by Rafael Santoya. And Arnold has half of his Arnold Classic competitions with the Rafael Santoya's IFBB and the other half with the IFBB Pro League, I believe it's called, which is part of the MPC. So the South Africa one was with Rafael Santoya, and Erin was in that contest. I haven't heard how she did. I think it was yesterday because we're taping this on a Sunday. So I'm sure she probably won because she was looking in phenomenal shape. I got to see her train every day at Powerhouse. And just this last week alone, man, her conditioning really came in. I don't think I've ever seen her as big as she was and as cut as she was. So I hope she did really well. My new book is still doing good, The Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder. In fact, I ordered some more. I got 20 more books. So if you guys are interested in getting one, and this is now the last week of my special deal where if you order a training or diet program off my website, dadbodtoripbod.com, that's dadbod, the number two, ripbod.com. If you order either a training or a diet program from me, I will send you out a free copy of The Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder. And that offer is good only until May 30th. So we've got about another week and a half at least. So get on that if you guys are interested in that. If you're interested in having me set up a training or diet program, I've got quite a few more orders this month. So that's going good. And we're going to start putting up videos, training and nutrition videos that are going to be up on the dadbodtoripbod.com website. So be sure to check that out too. And I also want to mention we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. They have very competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. So give them a call for more information and experience firsthand what sets them apart from the rest. So they are located in Tampa, Florida, but they will work with anyone across the United States. You can call them directly at their office at 813-922-8939, or you can visit their website, which is flalternativemeds.com, FL for Florida, alternativemeds.com, or again, their office number is 813-922-8939 and tell them you heard the ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you 20% off of whatever you order for your first order. They'll also give you a free consultation. So if you just want to talk to them and have some questions for them, they will not charge you for that at all. All right, that is our opening. So here is our interview with the 1967 IFBB Mr. America, one of the legends of the sport, Don Howarth. So enjoy this interview. All right, welcome to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I have a very special guest this week, Mr. Don Howarth. Don was a Mr. America winner with the IFBB, and he competed in the early days of the IFBB, so he's joining us now from California. Don, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Glad to have here. Yeah, you were a legendary bodybuilder in the 1960s. A lot of people still remember your name, and you got an award at the Muscle Beach Hall of Fame not too long ago, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know that too long ago. I think it was in 03, I guess. It's been a while. And yeah. I was the first one to be nominated to put onto the Muscle Beach Hall of Fame. So.
Nice. So, Don, tell us a little bit about your history in bodybuilding. What age did you get started? What got you interested in lifting weights?
Well, I was a gymnast in school and for a long time. Then I started working out with a friend of mine down the street where I still live in the same block, but everybody else is gone. And I worked out on my patio, and then I went to Vic Tanny's, and then from there I went to American Health Studios, and there wasn't too many big gyms like American Health Studios, but they closed down, and I finally ended up at Pasadena Gym, which was owned by Gene Mosè.
Oh, yeah.
I met Gene in 1958. I joined the gym shortly after that.
Okay. And, How old were you then, Don?
I must have been going on like 25.
Okay. Okay.
Did you play? Remember that far back. I'm just kidding.
Did you play sports in high school, Don?
No, the only thing I did was gymnastics. You know.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the only sports. We did a lot of other things when we were young. You know, we had our spearfishing club and went skydiving and things like that. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were always known for your big, wide shoulders. Do you think the gymnastics when you started? Do you think that sort of built that foundation?
Well, I don't know because of both. You know, everybody says, "Don, you ought to write a book on shoulders," and I said, "That's ridiculous because my mother is a." Got very wide shoulders. My father, my grandfather, you know, on both sides were a very large guy, so it was inherited, you know, shoulder girth. But, you know, I mean, the muscle had to be put on top of that, so eventually.
Yeah. What got you started into competing in bodybuilding?
When I graduated from high school, we all in those days wore penny loafers and Levi's and white T-shirts, and they got my prophecy. They gave everybody like a prophecy: what's going to happen to you when you're a senior? And they said, be Mr. America 1964.
Really?
And, yeah. Which was, you know, I hadn't even thought about working out for that until I went to Pasadena Gym and. I started entering and winning. Well, it took a long time to win the contest. And so I just went up the line until I won Mr. California in 1963. And then I was invited back to the AAU Mr. America in Harrisburg by John Grimmick. And, of course, that was in Harrisburg. And Vern Weaver's won at one. And then I went from there to Joe Weider, so because it was a hassle. I mean, even in all the contests in Mr. California, Mr. Los Angeles, you couldn't use any oil, and to enter the Mr. America contest, you had to have 5 athletic points, and being a gymnast didn't really count, so it had to come up with a 3 total lift, which was snatch, press, clean, and jerk, and I had to perform that in front of an official at the YMCA down in Los Angeles. And I really didn't want to do that because I got two herniated discs even before I started thinking about seriously, trying out for contests. So it took me a few years to get myself together physically to do that. In fact, probably working out saved me because the first thing they said, don't exercise, whatever you do. I couldn't move for 6 or 7 months because I had sciatica problems and scoliosis. And in those days, all I did was a fusion spine. I didn't want that to happen.
How'd you get the herniated disc?
Well, I think probably from, I remember I was working for Western Electric and we have big utility boxes. I stepped up the box and I got this real sharp pain in my back. I'm like, oh no, what is that? But I found out that when I was very young, probably 2 or 3, I bailed out of this kitchen sink and I chipped my tailbone, which put my spine out of whack. Plus, when I started getting larger, which wasn't much more, there was too much on top and not enough to hold the bottom down. But I haven't had any problem with it in many years, Even though I've got a little older, I still have a little problems with it, but not like it was at first.
Yeah.
Put me in the stun because I couldn't walk or sit up or drive a car for 6 or 7 months. It took a long time to get myself together. And, of course, I didn't want to. They didn't have any pain pills like they do these days. So I just it just happened. I made it through it. I mean, I remember practicing for my posing for some of the contests. And I remember that Mr. Los Angeles, the year before I won it, I went to make a turn to show a back pose. And I just fell down because my back just gave out again.
Oh, so wow.
Took me about 5 years to get it in shape, so I could really start to not be concerned about my back hurting, but whatever I do, so.
Yeah. So what was your very first contest, Don?
My very first contest was called Mr. Fiesta. They held it down towards San Diego, and I think that was 1960, I think I entered that contest, or 15. I might have been 1960 was the first one I entered.
Okay. Tell us about your experience in that. What was that like back then? What were the shows like back in 1960?
Well, like I say, they were AAU, and, you couldn't, the lighting was bad. Luckily, Dean Mosey and a few other people come along that knew lighting, from taking photographic of all the guys that were around those days. But in California, it was different in California compared to back east. I mean, I remember the first time I went back to Weider's contest. I mean, I thought it was a madhouse. And, in Los Angeles, you hear a couple of people clapping. That was about it. It wasn't a rage like it was out of California. I don't know why. And most people didn't, all brawn and no brains. I got that feeling out of them because you socially wise, it wasn't too good in those days.
Yeah. Did they hold the weightlifting contest in front of the bodybuilding back then?
Every contest I won, I mean, I received a trophy about 1 o'clock in the morning because you had to wait through, 125 pound class, 30, you know, about five or six different weight classes. And, you know, it was in the middle of the night that you finally got out of there and got your award. So that wasn't, when I first started, I wasn't taking any nutrition. There wasn't that much around in those days. Mm-hmm. Not like it is today. I mean, at Pasadena Gym, all we did was everybody drank lots of raw milk, and of course it was cheap then. You know, you could buy a quart of raw milk for 32 cents. Now you can't. You had to put a down payment on it now. You know, if you could find it, you know. And the diet was, I didn't get into nutrition until I got to Vince's gym. Vince and I, well, anyway, we'll get into that.
Yeah.
But, everything changed when I got to VOH Blair and started taking some aminos and Soybro, which is a hormone precursor, and vitamin C, because I never took a vitamin in my life. Mm-hmm. Winning all the contests I won until I got to like a junior Mr. America, the early part of 67. So,
wow. Was Rio H. Blair in California at that time, or was he in Chicago still?
Well, he was in Chicago, but when I met him, he was in California. Yeah.
Okay. It's always interesting when I hear the stories of bodybuilders from the old days, like how they trained and, you know, the kind of nutrition they followed, because it really was the early days of bodybuilding.
Well, yeah, there wasn't much nutrition. Like I said, at Pasadena Gym, I drank raw milk. Who knows the difference? But, I've always drank milk and done more on it. But everybody did it basically at Pasadena Gym because it was a powerlifting gym. A lot of guys held the world bench press records for Pat Casey held it for he used to work out there on Saturdays. I don't know where it worked out from there, but, you know, I think he bench pressed 615 in the old days. That was quite a bit, you know.
I remember that name, Pat Casey. I'm not a big powerlifting fan, but I remember his name.
Yeah, he worked out at Pasadena Gym. Plus, everybody there, I mean, I remember the first day I walked into, I parked my car in the back and in a small parking lot. In those days, of course, there wasn't that much traffic as opposed to now, and everything was pretty kicked back. But I went to go in the back door, and I thought the back door was closed, but there was a guy standing in the doorway. I went, oh, man, I weigh about 160 something. This guy's got to weigh 200, 300 pounds. And, of course, I went around the front and went in. The same guy was sitting behind the desk. It was a friend of Dean Mose's, and he weighed about 290, and he was a Chinaman, and he was the whitest guy I ever seen in my life, you know. And
yeah.
So, well, he was my mentor for about 4 years.
So who was this?
Richard Key. He was a good friend of Gene's. They went to school together in high school.
Okay.
And nobody ever seen Richard with his shirt off. Of course, the Asian quality in him, I guess, put him into that thing. But I always thought he was a lot older than I was. He was nine days younger than myself. We were both born in the same year or so.
Okay.
But he trained me for all those years I was there. And then when I went to Vince's gym, I had to redo everything because compared to Pasadena Gym, Vince's gym looked like Stonehenge. So,
mm-hmm.
So it just you had to adapt what you could do. And actually, it was kind of a blessing in disguise because I cut down on my time wise, and of course, in doing so, I was also taking nutrition from Reeway Blair, which helped greatly, not putting in so many hours into the gym.
So in the early days, when you first started, Don, how many hours and how many days a week were you working out?
Do I have to tell you? I worked out 6 or 7 days a week sometimes. In fact, for the Mr. California, Mr. Los Angeles, I was doing, I worked out in the morning time at 6 o'clock, and I'd turn around and worked out again at nighttime. So I was working double shifts.
Mm-hmm.
So I put a lot of time into it. I said too many hours. I could look back and see why, you know, it took me so much to gain, but I was a hard gainer. It took me a long time because when I started working out, I weighed about the about 140, and it took me about 5 years to get to about 165. But once I got to Pasadena and started eating what everybody else was eating, I went up to like about 228, I guess. But it wasn't all muscle, you know, so it took me a long time to get old.
You won Mr. Los Angeles in 1962 then, right? Was that your first big title win?
Well, the first one I won, I believe it was the Junior Mr. Los Angeles.
Okay.
In 1961. And then I entered the Mr. Los Angeles, Mr. California, Southern California, almost about three times.
Okay.
In 1962, I won the Mr. Fiesta and won the best back, arms, and chest, and whatever, I think. Yeah, then from there, I won the Mr. Los Angeles in 1962. And the Southern Mr. Southern California and Mr. California in 1963.
Okay. So when you were winning these titles, Don, was your aspiration then to go to win Mr. America? I mean, who were the guys you looked up to back then?
Excuse me, say that again?
Who were the bodybuilders you looked up to back then? I mean, were you thinking after you won Mr. Los Angeles?
There was only one for what I was ideal, and that was Steve Reeves, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
With that aesthetic look, and, you know, instead of looking like a gorilla standing up straight, you know. There's another fellow, Len Wyman. He looked good. He looked good, and, but he didn't continue on. But Reeves basically was the shape and everything else. It's pretty hard to beat that.
Yeah, yeah. And you had a physique very similar to his, I think, right? The wide shoulders.
Yeah, in some respects. But, you know, there's no way to compete with him because when I was working out at American Health Studios in 1957, I come out of the heavy room and I started to walk up into the other part of the gym, and I seen this figure, whatever it was, in the doorway, and I went, God, what is that? You know, and I couldn't believe it. And it was Steve Reeves. He weighed about 215 at that time. He was unbelievable. And
wow.
Then I seen him on the beach, and in person, in pictures, in person is two different worlds. There's a great picture of George Eiffelman standing on one leg and pointing to Steve. He's like, yeah, what do you, please give me a break, you know. It was taken down there a long time ago, you know.
Yeah. What was Steve like when he went to the beach? I heard people used to follow him around because he was so amazing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know, on the radio, I don't want to say a lot of things, but they did. You know, he was a handsome guy, unbelievable, you know, black hair, blue eyes, and, you know, I mean, just going, wow, what a great looking guy too, you know, so.
Yeah, that's amazing now when you think about it, when you think about how some bodybuilders are looked at today, but back then, when Steve Reeves used to walk down the beach, people used to actually follow him like he was a movie star or something, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, Len Wyman and I forget who the other fellow was. They used to walk down with their Zoris on, their sandals and a towel, and they'd walk down with their sunglasses on. And these guys, and Len Wyman was like about 6'1", and weighed about 225. Everybody thought they were off a flying saucer, you know?
So. right.
Yeah, so it was, you know, but that wasn't that type of a beach. Actually, the only beach around that anybody that felt safe with muscle was on, you know, the old Muscle Beach, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you work out there at all, Don?
Well, I worked out at the dungeon a little bit, not much. I never could work out where it was humid.
Oh, okay.
And of course, Pasadena and Vince's gym was fairly dry, but very hot. But that humidity, I started sweating right away, and I didn't like to build into it, you know.
Was Joe Gold out there back then at Muscle Beach?
Joe Gold was out there. I mean, he opened that first one, the first gym he opened, I guess, was like, it was 1960-something, I guess.
Uh-huh.
On Ocean Avenue, you know, and I knew Zabel real well. Zabel and I went back to the 67 Mr. America, and I used to go down and visit. I had a lady from that lived down in Venice Beach, and I'd go by Zabel's place, and we all go into Norm's and fuel up, you know.
So you won the Mr. California then in 63, right?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. So was your goal back then, did you want to go and win the Mr. AAU America? I think that's what everybody wanted back then, right, was to win the Mr. America.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I mean, once I, you know, I mean, I entered in 64. I don't know what I placed in my high class, or even, I think third, and then I didn't go back because Dave Draper, I had a feeling he was going to win it, and I was working in the studios making some money as opposed to starving all those years being a bodybuilder, you know.
Yeah.
And then 66, I still hadn't really got really full into all the supplements and everything, and I had to change my workout around. And at that time, I said, oh, I'll give it one more try, and that'll be it, you know. That'll be it. I remember Frank Zane saying something to me back, well, you'll be back next year. I said, no, this is it for me. I've had it, you know.
Really?
I just didn't feel any future working for Uncle Joe. Uncle Joe Weider.
So what year did you switch from the AAU to the IFBB?
Well, in 63, I went back to the AAU Mr. American Harrisburg, and then I switched over in 64 to the IFBB.
Okay.
Because when I seen Harold Poole, I guess it was 1961, Mr. America was held in Santa Monica Civic Auditorium. He was a couple months before he was 17 years old. And then, of course, I seen him in 63. And when I walked backstage, I went, wow, this guy looked like he stepped off a flying saucer, you know.
Really?
And,
yeah.
And he looked incredible. And everybody else, well, you know, Bruno Weaver was a hometown boy, and they picked basically a bodybuilder, weightlifter type physique. You know, some of them made 10.
You got like 17th place in that 63 America, right?
Yeah, that's what I got after winning Mr. California. And the reason that Grimmick invited me back is I usually, the guys that won Mr. California place high in Mr. America. But I didn't really feel right until I won the junior Mr. America in 67. Then I laid out for a few weeks, and I started training again. I got into really heavy into the amino acids and things to Blair, and I was getting tired. There was nowhere to take it, you know.
Yeah.
You had to deal with Weider, and I just couldn't handle that. You know, I knew who was getting all the benefits from it. It wasn't me.
So when did you hook up with Rio H. Blair? What year was that?
That was like about, I think, 64 when I met him.
Okay.
And then I worked out, I got went his program a bit, but you know, I couldn't afford it. I wasn't making any money. And of course he finally started to, you know, doing it for me. But, after 64, I was working for, a film place, and, my friend and I were working at a 20th Century lot, and, we're working out so many hours, and I just my body weight went down, but I was making money and had a nice car and clothes, which was a new thing for me. And, of course, somebody said one time that they'd see me, and I said, God, how was you disappearing? I said, well, I better get back into it. So that's when I got back into it. And a few months later, I won the junior Mr. America, but I knew that year, that was the last year for me. Because, well, I was down at a benefit through the fellow I trained, Eric the Trainer, and Frank Zane was down there, and he asked me, why did you quit? Why did you quit? And I said, Frank, I don't like to be used. And that's what Mr. Weider did everybody. So I just you know, I can harm myself enough with myself without somebody else doing it for me. So
so when you worked with Rio H. Blair, you really didn't know much. So everybody back then didn't know much about nutrition, right? So what did Rio teach you?
Well, I mean, he taught me, you know, the things that, you know, that make muscle grow, you know?
Yeah, amino acids.
You know, what these days when I see these guys throw away a yolk of an egg, that's sacrilegious to Blair, you know?
Yeah.
But that's the part that makes you grow, because we used to sit around with a cap of Berner's ginger ale, which would help to simulate everything, and we'd pop egg yolks for about an hour or so.
Wow.
And now doctors go, oh, God, you got to be kidding, you know?
Yeah.
But my diet, I mean, my diet changed several times, and and it wasn't to make it perfectly clear to everybody, is that Vince didn't teach me how to train or my diet, and he got a lot of his information from Blair. So,
Larry believed in high protein, high fat, right? Because he like, remember Larry
right,
Scott
right,
was
right, yeah,
have cream with his.
Right. Because right before the Mr. America, I was taking a lot of food because I was taking a quart of raw cream and about 2.5 cups of protein, plus eggs. And, I used to make a meatloaf and carry around and cut it and then eat as I go along through the time, And that's what it took for me to gain the weight. If I stopped, well, my body weight would drop. But once I got above, most of my contests were like the Mr. Los Angeles Miss Southern California. I weighed about 188, close to 190.
Mm-hmm.
But once I got over 195, I could go up. And just before I bailed out, I probably weighed about 208 or 212. There was a picture taken underneath the skylight at Vince's gym. My body weight, but I weighed 197 at the Mr. America that night. I felt a little lean. I got to a point where I didn't care anymore. I was losing because I used to train 6-7 days a week, and or I go to the beach and heel and toe in the sand and jog and do sprints and things like that. And as it got closer to Mr. America, I started working out less, and lo and behold, I started getting bigger too. So it got to the point, got that climax and said, "Yeah, that's it for me. That's it for me."
So your training, you used to train a lot of days a week. Did you cut back on that? Was that what helped you gain more size?
Well, yeah, I don't think it, but yeah, well, compared to Pasadena Gym, I was working out, 3 hours and was gut work, little did I realize it's diet,
Yeah.
And you have to put out those, 500,000 to 800,000 reps a day plus a 2.5-3 hour workout,
Yeah.
And there was nobody around saying, that's too much,
Right.
With all the juice around, they probably do 2-3 sets for each body part. And I think that would be enough.
right. Yeah, it's interesting looking back at the old days. You sound like you had an ectomorphic physique, right, Don? Because it was hard for you to gain weight.
Yeah, it was really hard for me to gain weight. I was very spent. I know some when I was kids, where I lived and still live, it was all rivers and places and hills and things, active all the time, If I wasn't falling out of trees, we were running and throwing rocks at each other, so.
right. So you did the Mr. America, the IFBB Mr. America in 64, and you got third behind Chet Yordan and Harold Poole.
Yeah, I don't even remember what 64 is like. I know the 66, Chet won. That year, yeah.
Yeah, that was the contest in New York, right, in Brooklyn Academy.
Yeah, there was an Academy of Music on all those days. And I just, because the year I went back in 66, I got stuck in New York for 11 days. And New York's not my most favorite place to get stuck for 11 days because dear old Uncle Joe wanted to take pictures. And he just, so I ended up there, like I said, 11 days. So the next year, I was, I said, "Well, I want a round trip ticket." "Oh, God, Don, I can't do that for you." I said, "Yeah, okay, Joe. Well, find somebody else, take my place." And he wasn't going to do it until about the last 3 days, and he gave in, and sent me a round trip ticket because I'm not going to, I did one day the day after the contest, took pictures over wherever it was in the studio, and then I got on a plane. Jabel and I got on a plane, headed back to California.
So why did you get stuck out there for 11 days? Because Joe didn't give you a round-trip ticket?
Well, he's taking pictures of everybody. I guess he just wanted to show his power over me. And he did a lot of weird stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When he asked me to come back to the Mr. Universe contest, and he said, "Well, after all I've done for you, Don," I said, "What the hell did you ever do for me, What the hell did you ever do for me?" And I said, "No. I didn't do it. Then years later, I found out. I said, "Yeah, I don't like people want me to commit suicide because Sergio Olivier entered that Mr. Universe. What a joke,
Yeah.
because, in fact, at the 68, Mr. Olympia, he entered unopposed. You know, why he went back to the Mr. Universe, I have no idea, but, you know, and I, like I said, I was burnt out, you know. I spent years and years of worrying about my body weight and worrying about what people thought of what I looked like, and it got to one point, and I could give a hoot.
So you said after you got second in America in 66, then Joe wanted you to go to the Universe in 67, but that was the one Sir Joe won, right?
After I won the Mr. America, because I couldn't get my trophy on the plane because the thing was like about 5 feet tall and it weighed a half a ton, you know? And so I wanted Joe to send it to me, and he was begging for me to go to the Mr. Universe, and I wanted my trophy. It took me about 6 months to get it. That's the only trophy I have left out of all the trophies I ever won.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, that got separated from me for like 4 or 5 years, and all of a sudden I got it back again. So,
wow.
I'm sitting in the front room now for a coat rack. So, but
yeah. But you did win the America in 67, right, Tom?
Right, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That was I felt good that night, too. I felt extra good. In fact, the rumor was, or it wasn't a rumor, Dick Tyler told me, he said, well, you know, Rock Stonewall is winning in first place so far. And I said, listen, I don't care, man. I'm hungry. I'm going to go eat. And, you know, nowadays, who's going to eat after judging, you know? And then the contest was held like a couple hours later. I just went out and ate, and after that, I felt great. But and I won, you know, so.
Yeah.
Big load off me.
Craig Zane won the medium, and Rock Stonewall won the short, and you won the overall.
Yeah, I don't know who placed what. I lost track of that a long time ago. I'm just glad to get home.
What did you think of Frank Zane's physique back then?
Oh, yeah, he looks good. He looks good. I don't know how he got to that point or whatever he took, if he did, you know. But, yeah. Yeah, I don't like to make comments about other people's physiques, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed like you guys were about the same level back then in the 60s because, you know, you beat him at the America that year and then he won it the next year in 68.
Yeah, he got real cut up, real muscular, but, you know, I mean, I just burned out on it. Burned out on all those years of working out, you know.
Yeah.
Like I said, there was no money into it. In fact, when I got back from the 67 Mr. America, a friend of mine called me up and said, Jay, listen, I got a space for assistant property manager that pays, but it only pays $65 a day. I went, $65 a day? That was a mountain of money to me in those days, you know?
Right.
So, and I went over there working out, but that got to my health, so I gave it up. You know, I went from like 215 pounds of body weight down below 160.
Wow.
Because, you know, going to work at 4 o'clock in the morning and getting off at 10:30 at night, you know. So,
wow. What was the job, Tom?
It was a property master.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, they do all the physical things that are, you know, like I did a few beer commercials and everybody drinking their beer and everything looks nice and there's a head on the beer and all that's got to be manipulated before the camera hits onto it. And I got all the jobs that nobody wanted. That was a soft drink and breakfast cereals, you know, so. But
okay.
It was good money, but it, like I said, it got to my health. I bailed out, and everybody that I used to work with is dead and gone now from strokes and whatever else, you know, so.
Wow. How long did you do that job for?
I did that for, let's see, one, two, about 3 or 4 years, and I went back into it again in the 70s, but it was worse than ever. Everything was going 100 times faster because it was it was bad enough as it was in the old days, you know, trying to have 3, 4, 5 commercials going at the same time and trying to prep for them, you know, so.
Okay.
Now it's got to be insanity, you know, because of all the traffic. And, of course, a lot of things are done by, I guess, a computer, so.
Mm-hmm. What did you do for a living when you were training for the shows and competing all the time?
Well, I mean, like I said, I was working in the film lab, and when the summer comes along, it was an easy job. You're not busting your butt all the time, you know, working.
Yeah.
And then summertime would come along, and they'd slow down so that you'd collect unemployment, or I worked at Vince's gym, you know.
Oh, okay.
But still, that you know, it's not very much. Well, in those days, it didn't count, and it didn't cost very much to stay alive as far as food wise, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Couldn't afford it now. Oh, Lord.
Right. Tell me a little bit about Vince's gym. How was it training over there? Did he help you with your training at all?
No, Vince. I told somebody, he says, "Well, how'd you get so big?" And I said, "I did everything. I did everything that Vince told me not to do, you know." And you know, I was already large when I went there. I just had to, I just had to get the muscle mature, and it took me a long time to mature it. And I never liked anybody saying, "Yeah, Vince did it," or I said, "Oh, I read a couple of articles in Weeders magazine. Oh, I sat down with Don and we planned out his program," and I went, "Oh, bullshit! You know, come on, give me a break."
Yeah, yeah.
I worked out very fast. I took for me a rest in between sets was putting the weight away and walking around the bench and sitting down and doing another set. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I worked out very fast. Never communicated with nobody in the gym, and of course I didn't have music in those days, which is one good thing that Vince liked because the same thing at Pasadena gym. I seen a couple of radios go out the door into the street. You know, somebody brought in.
Really. Really? Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, in those days, there was no radios. I mean,
no.
Bill Pearl's gym or nobody, you know. You know, we were in there concentrating and total focus, and that was the only probably way that that was, happened. Mm-hmm. So,
what was Vince like? Tell us a little bit about his personality. I know I heard a lot of stories about him. Vince Guaraldi.
Well, I don't know how far I can take that. Vince, I remember the first day I met Vince, Gene said that, you know, he had gone over and worked out there, and then because Gene and I got an apartment was just a few short blocks away from Vince's gym, but the first thing I met him, he said, oh, hi, fat boy, and I said, yeah, well, have a nice day, too, you know, and we were both born the same day, but he was 18 years older, and, you know, I was born on November 9th, and I got along with him to a point, but I just he did some things I didn't care for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't want to repeat them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And long as because you know Dan Mackey took over the gym at 4 o'clock, and I worked there from I forget when it opened up. The people had the keys to get in, but I think the gym opened up at 8 o'clock and. But for Mr. America, and I was working there, and Mackie was taking over at nighttime. Once we keep Vince out of there, we could keep everything going. Because Vince, when I first met Vince, he was okay, but then he started acting real weird, and I never paid much attention to him. Like I said, luckily he was gone each day I worked out. You know, right before the contest, I think it was. Right before the contest, I got a job over at Warner Brothers Studios, working mm-hmm. out in the scene dock. And I went to work at 7 and then got off at 3.
And okay.
Of course, I went from there right into work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to give it up a couple months before the contest because I just, you know, I wanted to make sure I did everything I wanted to do to get it over with. So,
was Vince's personality changing as he got older? Was that what it was?
Yeah, he did. He changed. He changed a lot. There's a lot of people that really helped him out and stood by him because, you know, he belonged to Alcohol Anonymous for I don't know how many years. And stories I heard, and he used to do a lot of pretty rank things to people, like jokes, and it all turned on him, you know, and people were. A couple of my friends, and he pulled some shenanigans on him, and I said to myself, you shouldn't do that, man, because there's nobody to mess around with. But when he got thrown back in his face, he got real belligerent about it, real, you know.
Yeah.
His posture was, if he didn't like it, he'd get in his truck and drive home, you know, and he lived a couple blocks away from the gym, so.
Did he kick a lot of people out of the gym, too?
Well, some, but most people just did, you know. It got to the point where this guy comes to the gym one day, and he's in a new car, and he's, hey, where did you get your so-and-so car? You know, I asked myself, well, what business is it business, you know?
Right.
And the guy just wrapped it up, and and it drove off. And but that's the way he did it. You know, the gym was very small. Mm-hmm. But he was in there, like I said, he'd be in there till like 11 o'clock, and he'd go home. Him and his wife was living over in Toluca Lake, which is, like I said, a stone's throw away.
Mm-hmm.
But he just, I think he had a couple of strokes, too, because he got he got to a point, things I wouldn't want to repeat.
Yeah.
That he did to people. And I just didn't like his manner after a while. You know, he's real rude. He thought rude was great, because I remember sitting in a place called Dupar's right down the middle of Studio City, and I was sitting there with somebody else, and he walked right by me. I stood up and said, hey, don't walk by me without acknowledging me. And he turned around and walked back out the door and went home, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I said too. And it got worse as he closed the gym in, I think, 95. I think he passed away in 97, I guess. But the gym was basically empty because he ran everybody off, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, everybody just kind of went across the street to where there was a gym across the street that opened up, you know. And he just, like I said, he just turned people off. So.
Yeah.
But I just didn't, you know, I didn't pay any attention to him after a point. I mean, I lost the respect for him sometime before that. You know, it's not me to judge anybody, but I just didn't like his attitude, you know, toward a lot of, like I said, a lot of people have helped him out and bent over backwards, and he screwed them, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
Some guy said, well, you know, Vince is a nice guy. Well, yeah, it's nice to you. Okay, you've been around him a couple of weeks. So I've been around him 30 years. He is not that nice in my perspective, the way I was raised or a lot of people, you know, so.
Yeah, I never met him, but I heard a lot of stories about him, and I know in a way he was ahead of his time because of his ideas about nutrition and even some training stuff. But
yeah, well, I believe that. But he got a lot of that from Ray Wurtz, Blair, and you know, I used to live on meat, eggs, and water at one time, which is not really a great thing for your body, but it'll get you cut up. And I was just famous for that and other things he did, you know, but. That didn't make any difference. I lose respect when whatever they say beyond that point doesn't register too much with me. So
when you stopped bodybuilding, Don, did you miss it?
No, I felt like I was released from bondage.
Really? Wow.
Well, you know, it consumed my whole life. You know, you day and night you're thinking about, you know, you're thinking about what you're going to eat or what you're going to work out. Are you going to feel good enough to work out? And I mean, right before the Mr. America, I was in an automobile accident with my friend who I used to work with over in 20th Century in the film business. And the car rolled, and we were going, we were going over top of a place down in the hills by Santa Monica, and the car rolled, and it ended up upside down in the street. My friend got ejected out, and I had a little nick on my cheek. And that was about it. And the highway patrolman came along and said, where's the seatbelts? You know, it wasn't compulsory at that time. He said, well, I said, we took them out and put other seats in the car just yesterday, a few days before. They said, well, it's a good thing because it saved their life, because the roof came down below seat level, you know.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Damn. So I was worried about that. First thing I thought of, oh man, I'm okay. I hope I can still work out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a couple more months. There's a lot of things, distractions trying to stop me. And I got tired of it. Socially and financially, it didn't work in those days, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Larry Scott made some money off his courses and things like that, and a few other people did, but I just, you know, it's not a thing that turned me on anymore. Trained people after that, you know, I mean, I was in hibernation for a while, but then I started training this fellow, Eric, the trainer, and fellows that work for him, and I've been doing that for about, you know, 15, 16 years, I guess, and, you know, I just take a day at a time.
A lot of people probably still remember you, right, from those days.
Well, you know, we never, you know, like I tell a friend, telling Al Jackers, I just, you know, nobody ever thought it would ever come to that. You know, I mean, nobody ever thought that we didn't become a legend until you're too old to do anything about it, you know.
Right.
I mean, you know, you don't become famous until you're almost dead.
So, right.
But yeah, you know, we never thought of it that way, you know, because I mean, I always wore shirts out in public that covered me up. I was never unclothed. I remember one time running over to the Market Basket to get an apple, and I still had my tank top on, and I got in the market, and I got in there, and I went, everybody's looking at it like somebody, some kind of freak, and the freak was me. You know, I didn't know that, so I got my apple and got out of there, you know. So.
Yeah. I started bodybuilding in the late 70s, and I remember back then hardly anybody worked out, so I can imagine how it was in the early 60s, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that saved it, I think, was the hippie generation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because anything out of the ordinary was accepted, you know.
Right, right. You know? You guys are right in the middle of the hippie generation in Venice Beach, right?
Yeah, right in the middle. I was in 1950s mode until I got divorced, and then I moved into Hollywood and got anointed with all the chaos that happens in those days.
Yeah. What was your finest memory of competing? What really stands out for you, Don, of all the shows you did?
Well, I guess it was a Mr. America. You know, I mean, Dick Tyler wrote an article in one of the magazines. And he said, "Yeah, I was." He was explaining what was going on, and I heard this big roar and people were applauding. And I got up on the pedestal and I stood there. I mean, I didn't even do a shot until like it seemed like forever, like a minute or so. People were yelling and screaming, and I went, "Wow, this is." Wow. This is what I've waited for all my life, and now it doesn't register at all. No.
Really? Did it register more after it was all over, or it just didn't register?
No, not really, because those things are, I mean, you know, Mr. America, who's that? You know, I mean, it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't all that bodybuilding wasn't all that popular. In fact, there wasn't any women even working out in the gyms in those days, you know, so.
No, no. How did regular women look at it?
Well, some of them all right, you know, but I mean, I remember a friend of mine, we were at this dance place in Santa Monica, and you know, there's two stewardess were to pick them up, and so we went over to their place, and she says, "Don't you hurt?" And I said, "Excuse me, I don't know what you mean." She said, "Well, you got too many muscles, and your waist is too small." I said, "That's the best compliment I had in a lot of months, man."
Your waist is too small.
Some of them accepted it, and some of it, they still, it was hard for them to accept it, I guess.
Yeah.
It's very strange because, you know, California was, it was, everybody in California, even at that time was, you know, well, it, maybe because of the crowd I hung around with, everybody's very physical and their diet and things like that, so.
Yeah.
Which is totally the opposite of these days. There's a lot of people over there that are carrying a lot more weight around than they should be carrying around. So.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So how's your health these days, Don? You're 83 now, right?
Yeah, well, I made roll call this morning. That's the important part of it. Yeah. In fact, I had to go get a referral for glaucoma on my eye, and I hadn't been to a doctor in about 30 years, and they appointed me a doctor, and so I went to the doctor. And said, "When's the last time you had a checkup?" I said, "Well, about 30 years ago, and a guy almost fainted." The doctor, you know, said, "Well, how much medication are you taking?" I said, "I don't take any medication." And again, I mean, I had to call up the insurance company and said, "Just give me a break, okay? When I get ill, I'll give you a call." You know?
Yeah, right.
So you know, I mean, I got my hurt parts, my shoulders, and you know, I deal with my back and here and there. But you know, on the whole, I'm all right. But you know, I do a little lifting, not much. You know, I do what I have to do to survive each day and feel good. You know.
Do you think that's why you're in such good health, because you kept up with the lifting?
Well, I don't know. You know, just genes also. My parents were very ill all their life. In fact, my father had scarlet fever, and he was colorblind. And
oh, really? Wow.
And he was and they all had heart problems and high blood pressure many years before they died. And I got to take that into consideration of the back into you know, in the 20s and things and.
And
the food they ate, because I remember when my dad would cook breakfast, and they'd cook up some bacon and throw the eggs in and wash the grease over it. And went, "Oh man, Dad, you can't do that anymore."
Right.
So, because the doctors that they had, they said, well, that probably would be 10 years longer because I got them under proteins and some vitamins and things like
that. Oh, really?
So they really started feeling a lot better. You know, it kind of perked them up, you know.
So, yeah, yeah.
The last year, the depression back in, the 20s, was really not an easy thing to do, you know. So,
right.
Because I remember, we had food to eat. Luckily, when I was young, everything was growing out in a garden, so mm-hmm. it was fresh food, other than what they have nowadays. And even during the war, they had Bixby gardens. And Mom was a great cook. I remember Dad saying, "Yeah, Mom, your mom couldn't even boil water when I married her." You know? So,
yeah,
but he was heavy. My dad was almost 6 foot tall. I wish I would have had that extra inch on my frame while I was working out, but they lasted to 84, you know, and
yeah, that's great.
So I'm just each day. I wonder about that. The thing that leaves me kind of empty is all your friends disappear. You know.
Yeah.
Gene was one of my closest friends, and he passed away on the 5th of July last year. So I talked to Dave once in a while and John DeCola. So.
Yeah, how's John DeCola doing?
Yeah, he's doing good. I haven't talked to John in 3-4 months, so I touch bases with him once in a while. So.
Yeah, last picture I saw him, he looked pretty good. He looked like he was in good health.
Yeah, I think that the last picture I seen him too was he went to the old Iron Man thing, and he had a picture. He looked good. Yeah, I mean, I just, he's probably still weighing about 185, 190. I was talking to somebody the other day and said, yeah, I told him, I couldn't afford to eat that much to gain that much weight. And plus, I'm not really interested in, I just want to make sure I make roll call each day and I can function mm-hmm. without somebody trying to, sell me a walker or whatever else, or just ridiculous.
Yeah. All right, Don. Well, thanks for joining us on the show. It was great hearing your story and great hearing about your life. I've looked up to you for a long time. I've seen you in the magazines for many, many years. So you have that legendary physique, and it's great to hear your story, and it was great to hear from you.
All right. You take care. Thanks for calling.
Don.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to Don Haworth for that great interview. It was great to talk to Don and great to meet him for the first time. Hopefully I'll get to see him next weekend when I'm out in Venice, California. Hopefully he'll come out to the Muscle Beach Hall of Fame. I want to thank our sponsors, Florida Alternative Medicine, Redcon One, and Old School Labs for sponsoring this episode. And next week, we'll be joined by Vic Downs, another old-school bodybuilder who competed in the 1960s and early 1970s. Vic is now 89 years old, but he called us from Canada, and we had a great interview about his career. So that'll be on next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week. Take care.